Welcome back to Ladies Who Create, a show where we'll be interviewing the incredibly inspiring women who are trailblazing the design and creative industries. I'm your co-host, Liz Meyer, a creative director and half of the Datalands duo.
And I'm your other co-host, Jess Rosenberg, and I'm a creative director currently working in the tech industry.
In today's episode, we interview Madeline Vogie, whose design writing and brand work have been featured in GQ, Vice, Fortune, Adweek, Business Insider, Rolling Stone, and more. Today, Madeline is working on her first book about a girl with special powers. And she's also the co-founder of Ora Bora, which is a refreshing drink with incredibly creative branding.
Welcome, Maddie. We're so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
We would love to just dig in. I'd love to hear about what your career has looked like thus far. You've been involved in so many different things, and it's super impressive. And we'd just love to hear from you what that journey has been like.
Yeah, for sure. I remember leaving college, and one of my sort of cynical professors with my creative writing degree was like, I'll see y'all in like the local cafe, aka like, if you got a degree in creative writing, good luck getting a job in a creative field. Like, it's just not that easy to break into. So my first job was, I was living in Denver and I worked for a small batch gin company. A hilarious trajectory, because now I don't drink and I make, like, you know, sparkling waters for a lot of people who also don't drink. But the first few years of work, I was the only creative person on a really small team doing a lot of copywriting and blogging and, telling sort of storytelling around this Scottish gin. That was sort of my intro into the creative world, but I was super untrained and kind of just like throwing spaghetti at the wall. And then I moved to San Francisco. I got a job in tech. I was working for a software company called Gusto. And that was like my first kind of big kid job. I remember like doing a panel interview and on my way calling my partner Paul and being like, they shouldn't hire me. Like, I have no idea how to do anything. And I spent a few years there doing copywriting and working on an amazing creative team. It's like, I didn't know what it could feel like to work with other creatives. So we had like a studio in this gorgeous office in San Francisco with like cool posters, and there were illustrators on the team and amazing designers. And it was very collaborative. And I realized like, okay, I love writing. I'm really enjoying kind of understanding how to write really compelling copy and tell a story, but also design is really cool. I don't know how to do it, but like, I'm watching these other people and I really connect with them and I feel opinionated on the decisions they're making. So, soon after Gusto, this is a hilarious, jump in title, but I got hired by a fintech app, called Playbook, a really small startup, to be their creative director. So I was like way over my head, designing a brand from scratch, trying to like put up a website and create a mascot. If you ever go check out helloplaybook.com, they have an amazing mascot now. His name is Cornstarch and he's a little star. And he's like very cheeky. And that was like my first foray into being personally completely in charge of a creative endeavor. And all along the way, my partner and I were working on a sparkling water brand. So that's Ora Bora. Paul was doing it full time when we moved to San Francisco, and this was 2019. And I was like working after work and helping with the brand and working with the agency that was helping us like scheme up our packaging designs. And that brings us honestly to today. I spent the last 2 years working full time for Ora Bora, leading a creative team. And I recently stepped away and I'm working on a book. So that's kind of my trajectory. I was like really missing writing and ready to I'm kind of tired. So I was like, I'm going to take a breather and focus on something I really love, which is writing again. So that's what I'm doing right now.
That's awesome. Wow. What a story. Very cool. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, that's amazing to go from Gusto, which I use personally, to pay myself for my studio. So I get to enjoy the brand at all times during doing a very monotonous task that I don't totally enjoy. I don't like looking at numbers. It makes me uncomfortable. But, you know, like the brand is so delightful. And then, yeah, to like jump up in title like that. I've been there also. There's been a big jump in title and you're like, what am I doing? How did I get this job? Why?
Did you mess up at all? Did you fail? What did that feel like? Jumping into that big role for the first time.
Yeah, I messed up a lot. I was completely overwhelmed. I had this amazing boss, the founder of this app, who was so pro, just like, let's try it. He was very delightful. He was a product designer and engineer, so he was a little more sort of process driven. But he was very much like, if it makes me uncomfortable, it's probably the right thing. And so it was really encouraging me to like push boundaries on everything from like, okay, fintech tends to be like a blue-green masculine branding. What does it look like to not be like that? Mm-hmm. There was a lot of like encouragement around differentiating, but yeah, 100%. The stakes felt very high because it's people's money. Mm-hmm. We're like moving it around. Sparkling water is incredibly low stakes and unserious. And that felt very serious. And there was, you know, issues in my copy and like, I don't know what an IRA is. So it was like, you know, a lot of research, messed up language, hiring and firing agencies that were not delivering, trying for the first time to create content like TikTok content when it was really just, you know, emerging onto the scene. So yeah, I definitely messed up a lot. And honestly, I had no idea what I was doing at times. I think the number of times I had to ask people on the team who were in finance and had been in finance for a long time, the most rudimentary questions. I'm sure at times my boss was like, I'm sorry, how did you get here?
Well, you probably learned a lot about finance in a very quick amount of time, I would bet.
I definitely learned a lot. It was probably good for me. I resonate with not, you know, numbers not being good.
Yeah.
They're not good for me.
What made you actually step away from that job and go full time for your personal company?
Yeah, it's a great question. There were probably two factors. One, I felt overwhelmed, honestly. I was like, I grew so much being in charge and being the sole decision maker around creative. But I think I learned something about myself, which was like, I really like a team. I really like shared responsibility and like collaboration. And I had it a little bit, but I was really stressed. I just felt the weight of all the decisions I was making that were going to affect this, like, you know, brand with big investors. And it just felt like so important. So that was one factor. I just was like, I don't know that this stress is going to go away entirely, no matter how empowered I feel. And then the other factor was, Paul and I were like finally ready to put our eggs in this basket together. I think for a few years it was like, we're hedging. We can't have the only two income earners in our house working for kind of a pipe dream. And finally it was like, one, we need full-time support creatively. And two, like it's a little bit of a safer bet. We're big enough that we can kind of make sense of it.
That's so cool. Yeah, I did a similar thing. I was in a job where I was very overwhelmed by my title and my responsibilities and kind of onboarding myself into like marketing and sales and all of the things that I wasn't comfortable with all of a sudden as like a director of brand. And I was like, I'm just a brand designer. What am I doing here?
Yeah.
And then my studio was, you know, growing a bit and needed someone to take over from someone else. So I just kind of like jumped into it because I was too stressed in my full-time job.
Yeah.
Jumping into the studio made more sense at that point, but it, yeah, that's, it's a big jump. It's scary. Also, I can imagine that, especially for like a CPG brand, it's like, oh,
yeah, it feels risky. It's such an interesting thing. I'm sure a lot of creatives feel this, but just generally, like, am I overwhelmed because this is, I'm putting myself out there and this is a growth opportunity, or am I overwhelmed because temperamentally I would do better in another setting or with collaborators or with a boss? Like, sometimes I think I'm actually better suited to have someone who is like making decisions above me. And I used to think that was a weakness. And now I'm like, I actually might just be how I thrive. So
you know, for me, it's taken several places to really learn about how I work best and the types of environments that don't work for me. But I resonate because for a while, especially earlier on in my career, I would think that it was me not being enough or not being good enough for the environment, or that I couldn't do enough. Well, ironically, I was doing too much. And so the feelings were very, I don't know, ironic. But
totally. It
takes trial and tribulation to learn about ourselves.
And trauma.
Yeah, seriously.
So starting, going all in on Ouroboro, it's such a creative brand, undoubtedly. Like, you see it in the packaging, yeah, on the website, and you clearly had so much fun with it. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you even dream up a world as creative as this, and for yourself, too. Because, like, I know for me as a creative and designer, designing for myself is probably one of the hardest things ever. So I'd love to hear about what that felt like for you.
Yeah. It is a really fun brand. I think, one, Paul is my husband, and he is deeply creative too. Although he works a lot operationally, he's the CEO. So he does a lot more in the sales and ops space. But from the onset, I think we had a really similar vision, which was, now it's hard to imagine, because there are so, so many beverages and they just keep coming. But in 2018, 2019, when we were scheming this up, there wasn't really an artisanal sparkling water that was like on the higher end of a price range, had really funky, high quality ingredients. For those listening, Ouroboro is like, we use herbs, fruits, and flowers to differentiate our flavors. So like, I'm drinking pineapple holy basil, which is made with like a real Tulsi holy basil extract.
Favorite flavor is holy basil. Like, I grow it in my garden. I'm obsessed with it. It's such a rare little herb. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No,
you.
I totally agree. Yeah, also the name, it earned its name. I think our biggest thought was like, this should, one, look very different on shelf. And right now, a lot of sparkling water is very commoditized feeling. So like, some of them have been around for hundreds of years. And they're just a little bit staid branding wise. So what if it was like delightful? I think we were taking inspiration from both like the brands of our youth. I'm thinking about like Danimals and things that had like mascots and were really playful, but like, we're grown up now, but I still like that stuff. And also, more than anything, what would it be like to have a brand that we didn't have to, like, you know, in fintech and software as a service, I'm like having to enter into a new personality to write, and I'm like method acting. Yeah. This is like entirely me. I don't have to rewrite my copy, because it's like, well, it's just exactly who I am. And same goes for these designs. It's like delightful, should be surreal, like our flavors, and kind of It's a little bit bizarre. On this can, we have like a little seahorse playing a saxophone, and there's a haiku. There's it's just a bit surreal. And I think, yeah, that was our biggest goal, is just like, this should be really playful and differentiated on shelf.
Yeah. And I mean, it is. And the details of the can, like, I'm just going to read the little snippets on this can, because they're just so delightful. But I'm drinking the Ginger Meyer lemon flavor. And
up top it says, "Hello world, from the lamb to your hand, meet Ora Bora. Our sparkling waters are made with herbs, fruits, and flowers for earthly tastes and heavenly feelings." So awesome. And then you have little snippets below. "I bathe in lemons and climb spicy ginger trees. They have stripes like me." So cute.
And mine is the strawberry basil. I feel like this is sponsored. This is not SponCon right now. This is like legitimately Jess and I like buy this ourselves. It's legit. So like mine is the strawberry basil. Mine is "These herbaceous hills bursting with fresh strawberries. I wear them as hats." And it just tastes so good. Like, how do you get that basil to actually taste like the basil that I pick in my garden? I don't understand it.
There's something about like plant extracts are crazy. We could have like a 1,000 gallon vat of purified sparkling water and add like a drop of basil extract, and it's just like explosively flavorful. There's something about it.
I am so intrigued by the whole thing. I mean, such a different world than what I'm used to. It's something I'm enjoying greatly, and I grow herbs in my garden, and I've had chickens. I'm like, I'm this.
You're like, the target. You're target market.
I am. You know, that's probably why I'm so passionate about it. I'm like, oh, I wish I came up with this idea. But like, even coming up with these formulas and having the palate to recognize the flavors as being realistic versus chemical. And I just, what is the research process like for you guys? Like, do you go to a lab, or do you cook things up in your house? Like, how does it work?
It's a great question. When we started, we were using a soda stream in our house and just like tossing in like basil leaves and frozen strawberries and things around our house. Honestly, I don't even think they're ingestible, but we were using like essential oils and just trying whatever we had. Now we obviously, it's a bit more formalized, but we learned pretty quickly there's just a job called food science, which is an amazing, cool field. And we work with food scientists who send us like these, they're just like blank cans with labeled with Sharpie, like, "Hey, this one's like frankincense and pineapple," or whatever. And they'll send along. Usually we have in mind like, okay, we really want to do a hibiscus flavor. We think it suits the brand. It's like recognizable. People have heard of it before, but maybe never drank it. And they'll send along like 20 combinations, and we'll kind of send our notes and a little bit of a back and forth, but it's kind of one of the best parts of the job is when we get a box of new samples and try them out.
Very cool.
That's amazing. I want that job. I mean, I'm just gonna say
it's a cool job.
You need a taste tester.
Send it. Okay, great.
I've had like every flavor. They're all so good.
Thank you so much.
I'm a real fangirl. Sorry.
I'm a fan. I'm kind of a fangirl too at this point.
Do you get flavor requests or suggestions from your fans?
We do. We just got a great one today. Someone sent in a request for rosemary key lime or rosemary lime. Oh, that sounded great. More and more we've been polling our audience because they're very opinionated. So we'll send out emails. We'll do competitions. Like if you are the recommender of our next flavor, then you'll win. We'll send you a huge supply. We have a pretty opinionated fan base, and also they have really good ideas. So it's fun. And they're naming things I've never heard of. I think we've been getting a lot of turmeric recommendations lately, which I think would be really cool. Would make for a really fun, like, golden world to design.
Yeah, yeah.
I think our main vision is not to go too far down the herbalism route that it's like people feel out of the loop. Mm-hmm. It's really nice that we can kind of like bridge that gap of like, oh, I've heard of basil. I've had it in pesto. Like, it would be interesting to try. So we try to stay in that realm and not go so far down the like functional herb route that people are like, I don't know what this is. I'm trying to think of, we've been really working on some spicy flavors this year. So that's going to be fun.
Cool. I'm excited to try those. I love spicy everything.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Yeah. The Meyer lemon one is so good. It like hits the spot. I've been weaning myself off of soda. Like,
oh, nice.
Like big cola.
Yeah.
You know, say their name.
Do I want to name names?
Yeah, but I've been weaning myself off it, and it, I mean, this really helps. You know, it hits the spot in a way. I need that little bit of
zing,
sparkle in my life.
Yeah.
So something a little sour, it helps too, because it, you know, there's that vibe, a little spice, a little sour, a little sparkle.
That's awesome. Good for you. That's a hard thing to get off of.
It's been a journey, I will say.
Would love to hear more about the books that you're writing and the story behind it, what that process looks like.
Well, let's see where to start. In college, I was doing a lot of creative writing. I never wrote anything more than maybe 10 or 15 pages, sort of short story. And my dad's an author, and having grown up watching his process, I was like, I'm never going to do that. That looks so hard. I remember him, like, his morning routine was like, we're getting ready for school. He's in his office. Like, there's incense pouring out from under the door. He's trying to like center himself. He's got like Tibetan bowls. He's trying to like get in the headspace to write all day. And he was just a bit tortured. And I just felt like, ooh, that looks really hard. And somehow here we are. I've been a huge fantasy fan for my whole life. I grew up, I'm named after Madeline L'Engle, who wrote A Wrinkle in Time. I have like loved Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis. And so it's been in my head. And a few years ago, I just started like brewing a story. I felt like it was like being sent to me. I just started envisioning this character, and her name right now is Florence. I don't know if that's going to change, but all that being said, I finally decided to step away from Ouroboros. I just did like a month ago, and start working full time on this book, because I've just been like mulling it over my head for years. You know, some creative ideas come to you and like 2 weeks later you're like, I'm not interested in that anymore. Somehow this like stuck, and so I felt like it deserved some attention. So anyways, I'm writing like a new adult fantasy. Hopefully it'll be a series, but it's my first book ever, so I'm also like listening to podcasts and reading books about how to write books, and kind of outlining and learning the process. But I'm so just like alive with excitement about it. And I thought I would be really distracted. I'm very easily distracted and kind of like would be lazing around without the structure of a real job. But I just like, so far, so good. I've been sitting and typing and outlining, and it's got a really cool setting. It's going to be in sort of like a different world, but sort of a Greek North African climate, deserty, and really cool flora and fauna. And as we know now from like Ouroboros, and also like all of my creature tattoos, like I love critters. So I've been doing a lot of research, which is fun.
That's awesome. Are you traveling to any of these places for research too?
That's definitely, it's like I've been taking little field trips and chalking it up as like a part of my research. Like yesterday, I went to see Dune at like 10 a.m. I would really like to visit maybe Morocco, Egypt. I've been to Greece before to get inspired, but you know, we'll see. Maybe later this year. I need to get enough done that I feel like I've earned it, because we're not there yet.
write your first draft completely finished, go travel to these places, and then like, you know, rewrite, be like, actually this desert is a little bit different than it was in Dune, so I need to go back and edit.
I mean, it's all a business expense also, so
you know. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I can put it on the company card.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's research. It's important for the process.
No, I agree. I think it would be very honoring to this like new endeavor to actually, there's, have you two ever done the artist's way?
No.
I've tried.
Okay. I relate.
I try to do a lot of things and then I...
Totally. I've never finished it, so I'm on the same boat, but there's like a great piece about how important it is to actually honor your creative endeavors in what, like, whether it's with time or energy or money, like, yeah, like take that creative writing class, pay for it, or yeah, go on that trip and do research. It's worth it. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's so funny. That book has been in my Amazon cart literally for months, and I'm not buying it only because I have this really toxic trait of buying too many books I don't read. But so I'm like promising myself to read like all of these books that I haven't read yet before I buy another one. But I think I'm actually going to pull the trigger and buy this one now.
Okay. I've found that like something happens in the universe when you start thinking about doing the artist's way, where people keep bringing it up to you. So you're going to know when it's time to check out.
I think it's definitely time. It's come up so many times in the past months. It's definitely time. I'm going to start.
Oh, no, this is my first mention today. Okay. I mean, it's been mentioned.
Get ready. It's coming for you.
Many times in the past. Oh, maybe I should have just done it back then. And not. Well, I mean, you could borrow it from the library. That could be. Totally. An easy entry. But have you ever done like workshops in the past few years for creative writing or for any of the endeavors that you've been, you know, pursuing lately? Is it something that you've had to like work up the courage to start doing, or did you, you know, just naturally?
No, I would definitely say I have sort of this funny dichotomy where I feel like on one end, I'm like kind of feel like an imposter. I'm not a real writer. I've never written anything like it's so long. I've never written a book. I have no idea how to do this. And then I have this other end that's like, I don't need formal training. Everything I make is perfect. I don't want my brain to be tainted by anyone else's opinions on how to do things. And I have finally let go of whatever that is, which I think is maybe like fear-based, and I'm just I've taken some workshops. There's a bookstore like 25 yards from me right now that offers amazing creative writing classes, so I've taken a few of those. I have been submitting my work. There's a really cool website for anyone who's a aspiring writer or writer called Submittable, and it just like collects every or many like literary magazines and journals, print and digital, all of whom are looking for submissions. And it collects them in a long list. And it's like, they're looking for poetry due in 24 hours. They're looking for prose they're looking for something themed around girlhood. And you can submit everything right through it. So that's been a big practice for me over the last few years, is submitting my work as regularly as I can. I get rejections all the time. Like, I think I've only had maybe two things published in like little journals, but everything else, I've just like every other week, someone sends me a letter. Like, it's not that we don't like your work. It's just that it's not a good fit. So I would say, no, it has not come naturally. I'm definitely like trying to take workshops, put myself out there and not be afraid of rejection. And, I meet with my old creative writing teacher every couple of weeks from college and like show him my work and just get like ripped apart. So yeah,
yeah, that's okay.
It's
been, that's good.
Yeah, I think it is good.
It like balances out that I think I have a very similar process where I am on one hand, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing ever. And then when I go to do something, I'm like, no, I know exactly how to do this. I don't know why anyone would think otherwise. And it's like some interesting imposter syndrome meets narcissism that I can't quite understand where it's coming from. So it's...
That must be a common, and like high achieving creative people, I would bet that's a common, like, I don't know, set of contrasting feelings that we experience, and often like roller coaster peaks and valleys style.
Yeah. Yes. Like painful. On top of the world into trough of despair. And
yes.
I was at a cafe the other day. And there was a guy there, he was probably in his 60s, and he was cartooning, like drawing out a bunch of cartoons. And I was like, hey, what are you working on? He was like, oh, it's my first graphic memoir. He was a really cool guy. I talked to him for a while. And he said, I was like, what is like the one thing you wish your creative younger self knew? And he was like, you don't shit gold. Like your first draft is not good. Your first try is not going to be good, no matter how much you think it is. You know, you hear stories every once in a while of like someone writing a novel in 24 hours or something, and then it's like a bestseller, and it's just like those are not helpful stories for the narrative we already have in our heads. Mm-hmm. I thought it was nice. So I think you're right that a lot of people have that mindset. I'm not sure where it comes from, but for some reason sometimes we think we're terrible and we can never do anything, and other times it's like it's perfect and I don't need input and I'm not gonna edit.
Something to be said too about like trusting our instinct and our gut when we're making things. It's like if we think yeah. genuinely good, like what we made, and we're proud of it, then we should stand by that. But I do love the advice that he gave, because it's so true. And you've probably experienced this working in tech as well. There's that pressure to create fast and good.
Yeah.
I think that's not a natural way for creatives to be creating. And I think the tech mindset of in-house teams, especially, and the pace in which people work, like designers and writers are just expected to crank out really high quality work very quickly.
And totally.
That pressure that just kind of like grinds people down. And I've seen it, I've experienced it so much too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that resonates. How do you, what are some ways for you personally, like on the imposter syndrome side, how do you work through that? Or how have you?
I think something I've been trying to do lately, also inspired by the artist's way, is like bring some play back into my creativity. Like you're saying, tech is like so fast moving. It feels both high stakes and low stakes because you're testing so much so quickly that sometimes if you spend too long on something, it's just not worth it. It's just going to get replaced in a few weeks when it fails a test. So I think lately I've been trying to like, one, make my workspace really delightful. I had this vision in my head of me working in this like beautiful, clean, kind of sterile place. And part of the artist's way was like getting in touch with the like childlike nature of creating. So I think when I feel like, ugh, being creative and artistic is not fun right now, it's really stressful. And I definitely took that in a lot from working in tech. It's been like, okay, what if I have like a bulletin board covered in little art and I'm doing things I'm not very good at. I bought some oil pastels recently and just like hacking around with them. I have no idea that it's not turning out well. But I think that's been a good practice recently, is like trying to get better at being okay with things not turning out well, and just like being for fun. And like I said, submitting my writing places and just getting rejected, just being like, it's not that serious. And yeah. Everything felt so serious for so long when you make being an artist work and you're getting paid for it, just feels quite serious. So I think that's been helping, but I would say I already can anticipate, I'm having such a good time writing right now, creative writing. And
I know in a few weeks I'm fully prepared. I'm just going to like sink into a, I can't do this. I don't know how. This is going to take forever. I'm going to let everyone down. I'm not good at this. It's almost like now I know it's coming and it's kind of inevitable. And I have literally notes in my room, like on my desk. One that's really been hitting recently is your feelings are irrelevant. Mm. It sounds very counterintuitive because I'm like, you know, we all be feeling big feelings, but it's actually been so helpful for me. I literally have it right next to my desk and it's just like, you want to do this. You set your mind to it and you can. And thousands of people have done it before you who never done it before. And how you feel in this moment doesn't matter. It just doesn't. And that's been counterintuitive, but really helpful to be like, got it. I don't need to like, listen to this. Totally. I know what I want.
I always thought that feelings were like weather. And, you know, it's like some days are cloudy and dark and thunderstorms, but it's going to pass.
Yeah, completely.
It could be sunny and 65 degrees, the perfect day. But yeah, I love that mentality. And I love the visual.
Mature. Too. That's very mature. I'm still coming out of like understanding like how my moods affect the work that I put out and that I'm making, like in general, like client work and stuff. Like some days I really feel like I can't do anything. How did I get here? And then other days, it's just like this blind narcissism that I know what I'm doing and I completely. Can't believe I ever doubted myself because I'm me. But then, you know, a week goes by and down in that trough again and you're like, oh, how could I ever think I'm so wonderful? So it's
totally.
Yeah. I think it's like therapy would help probably.
For sure. Yeah. It's nice to have someone to remind you that it's just because you feel it doesn't mean it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Which is interesting. It's like maybe true right now, but
are you a fan of stoicism or like stoic practices?
I probably shouldn't say yes because I only know a little bit about it, but I definitely resonate with the idea. Are you?
A little bit. I think when I was finding myself in those emotional journeys, I had some friends that were like, oh, you should look into Stoic philosophy. And it's interesting to read about. I'm not by any means someone that's going to go around and preach it. And, you know, but it's interesting to read about because there are some practices and things that, you know, are part of that philosophy that not that they like remove feeling, but it's just like the reality of the world is that it is what it is. Like the sky is blue, grass is green, like things are the way they are. But we as humans tend to formulate all of these different stories based on our perceptions of how they are. So
yeah.
Ryan Holiday is an author that, you know, writes a lot about it and puts like a modern spin on a lot of the older Stoic philosophies that I really appreciate.
It's really cool. I'm going to look into it more. I think something that feels a bit countercultural about all of it is how much we've been taught to index on our emotions and like really listen to what we're experiencing in our bodies. And I think that's so important, 100%. Mm-hmm. But it's been interesting, I used to struggle a lot more with my mental health in my early 20s. And I spent so much time looking inward and like finally listening and like trying to understand what I needed. And then I found it so refreshing to kind of realize, okay, I've taken care of myself. I'm in a really stable place. It's okay for me to feel overwhelmed or like an imposter, or like I'm terrible at this, and not listen. And just be like, okay, I've given this enough attention over many years. I'm actually just going to move through this right now. I'm not going to go like take a nap because I feel tired right now. I used to because I needed it, and now I'm not.
it's it almost feels like a part of growing up. I'm not sure, but
this whole totally thing.
Yeah, definitely. That's that you can not take that nap. I do take that nap. I still take that nap.
Sometimes I do too.
Yeah, that trough really gets me. It's an adventure. It's like a roller coaster. It's like riding that high. And all of a sudden you're like taking a nap in the middle of the day.
And you know, I think a lot of artists are really highly sensitive. So you're probably experiencing the world differently than the people who aren't stopping to take a nap. Like, you're probably feeling stimulated and emotional in a way that a lot of people don't. So you're probably doing the right thing.
Yeah, I think it's like scheduling and figuring out who you are in general and being okay with that sort of thing also. I think my journey of growing up and just accepting who I am and being okay with those feelings, feeling the feelings instead of feeling ashamed about, just wanting to go lay down.
Yeah. Totally.
You know,
I think there's a lot of value to that too. Sometimes you need a nap and I've always said that.
Sometimes you need to just like wrap yourself in a blanket, lay in your bed and just sleep it off. And then you wake up and you're okay again.
You're like, I can actually do this. Yeah.
Like you're a toddler again.
But the next day, I sleep through the night. Like, that's how I feel when I nap these days. I'm just like, wait, is it what day is it? How long have I been sleeping for? Like, where am I?
There's like a terrifying moment when you wake up from a nap and it's dark out and you're like,
I don't know where I am.
And we only have a few minutes left, but I'd love to hear about how you envision your career evolving in the future. Do you see yourself as a writer? Do you see yourself as a business owner again? Any ways that you've been envisioning the design and creative industries evolving in the future?
I would really love to figure out what it's like to be a full-time writer for a time. I think I'd like to take the next year plus to like see what it's like to put out a book, query publishers and like actually do this. But on the side, I have like a little creative agency with a friend of mine who's now the creative director of Ouroboros. So I think I'll always have one foot in design, and that's really fun and it's nice not having it as high stakes as it used to be. I think my vision for the future is that I would like continue to move towards the things that make me really excited, even if I've never done them before. And maybe especially if I never have. Like, part of me feels like, what if I write this book and I love the story so much that I want to make a movie? Ooh. That'd be so cool. Can I do it? Probably not. But like, I don't know. It just makes me excited to think about right now. And I'm trying to be like, open to possibilities. Into the future, though, I think I would like to spend a while focusing on writing and having like art and creativity be just like these fun side things that I'm doing, and design and oil pastels. In the creative world in general, let's see. I don't know if it's just like sort of the bias around now being in the creative world, but I just feel like so many more people are creating.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone I know is, even if they don't create for work, like has a side thing. They make pottery. They have a gallery show on the weekends. They have a band. And so I think that makes me feel really excited for the world in general. I feel like it's really good for humanity, for people to be creating. And I think everyone has it in them, even if they are very like, you know, quanty or very sciencey, like there's something for everyone. And so I think, I don't know how that's going to affect creative industries in general, but I think it's really fun that it feels like a big pendulum is swinging where creativity is for everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. And you can totally make a movie. Are you kidding? Like, I mean, just imagine hard. A world where strawberries are hats and, you know.
Completely. No one's made that movie.
I want to see a these cute little lemon characters with one eye coming to life. I'd watch that.
And like the Meyer Lemon jacuzzi.
Yeah.
Totally. I would sit in that thing.
I would watch that too. Are there any design trends or sort of like industry things you have noticed or you think are on the horizon?
I think I've noticed a lot of the same sort of thing, like people that I wouldn't have expected having hobbies that are more creative are just like popping out with stuff. And I'm like, wow, that person is a data analyst, but they're, you know, chopping wood on the weekend. I don't like gardening. I think it's like a pandemic thing. I think like when the pandemic hit, I was one of those people that, you know, got chickens, and it wasn't on purpose. It really wasn't. It was like, I have all this land, and I was like, live in the
chickens happened like, to you.
I know they did. They did. I saw them for chicks for sale, and I was like, I gotta get some chicks. I gotta save them from, I don't know,
from big chicken.
From big chicken. But yeah, I loved those things so much. And I eventually, there was a conflict between my dog and the chicken. So
no.
Gave them to my friend who has a farm. But I digress. It's just something I think people had time to figure out who they were a little bit without commuting to a job. Mm-hmm. Or
so true.
You know, there's just something about that time has, I think, unlocked a lot of people's brains, and it's kind of fading lately, I think. Mm-hmm. But you know, with return to work and office and stuff, but yeah, I do think there's like a lot more creativity lately, and it's just kind of beautiful. I like seeing what's coming out of people's brains. It's like you're getting a look into their psyche a little bit. It's just interesting.
It's been interesting to see tools like AI tools like Midjourney empower anyone to create, you know? So it's kind of putting that power in people's hands to generate whatever's in their heads with words and then see an image get spit out in like really insanely good quality. So that's been really wild to see happen very quickly. But on the flip side, I hope that this, I don't know, renaissance in digital creativity kind of sparks offline creativity in some way. Like, I hope to see more people making with their hands too, like off of a computer.
Yeah. It kind of feels like that's so interesting. I'm sure that will happen because artists like being differentiated. It's like something they crave. And if AI is sort of accessibility of creativity and art is so now like prevalent that maybe folks will go back to analog things more and more.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it all evolves. But I was at a South by Southwest talk yesterday, and I don't really know anything about I know like baseline understanding of blockchain and crypto, but I am not a crypto girly like at all. And I went to some talks and learned a lot about like creators selling their artwork on the blockchain and a little bit more about what that means. And I think there's a whole world of creators doing that more and more too. So I think that'll be really interesting to see how that'll. I still can't speak to it in a way that makes sense. I had learned incrementally a little bit more about it yesterday. I was like, oh, okay. I think I finally get it. Maybe. I don't know.
I'm not there yet.
I was in that world for all of like 2021. I was like very into it, like crypto, and not like as much NFTs, but just the idea of applying your art to the internet you know, just kind of like having it live there and finding an outlet in this new community, because it felt like I had already defined myself within design, and that's who I was in the design world. And there was an opportunity all of a sudden to be an artist for the first time, like separate from my name. And not that it matters, not that anyone actually cares, but in my head, I'm like, oh, this is the box you put yourself in. Well, here's like a vast landscape that you could explore over here in this blockchain world. So it was really interesting, but I think there was like a renaissance and then it dipped, as they say. And now it's not dipping. I don't know what they call it. My husband knows more about the name, the terms, but yeah, it's like, it's cool. There's some stuff going on there that's really, really interesting. And I think there's a lot of the AI mixed with the blockchain stuff gets kind of murky, you know, copyright wise with styles and artist work versus collage and art direction. But it's a new frontier, I will say. And it's fascinating and very interested to see how it evolves and how it becomes less weird. That's all I can say. I don't know the other way to put it, but less weird.
Maddie, any advice you would give to folks who are thinking of committing to a creative pursuit that maybe otherwise they'd be nervous to kind of like take the leap on?
I think my first piece of advice is, if you feel the call of the void on it, like, go, just do it. Buy the materials you need, even if you don't know how to do it. Read a book, listen to a podcast, just try to figure it out. And if it's sort of a side pursuit and it's not for work, just like getting really okay with rejection is a really good start. And I think there are a lot of ways to do that. Like if you're doing a visual medium, submit to things, find little magazines and lit mags. And there are so many out there, and just send your stuff, even if you think it's kind of ass. And honestly, I think this maybe is a bit controversial, but I feel like TikTok is such a fun, I mean, maybe we're going to lose it today. But I think I found it to be a really fun practice in putting myself out there. It's just like, take a video of your process, talk about what you're working on. I don't know. There's something about starting to call yourself something even before you're good at it. That's really empowering. So I would just say, like, don't be ashamed. It's really a special thing to want to create, and it's okay if you're bad at it, and it's okay if no one likes what you make, but you should keep doing it.
Yeah, I love that. I love the confidence of calling yourself the thing. I worked for a CEO once who called that being a puffer fish, that you are bigger than what you actually might think you are at the moment, but just to like always have that sort of confidence and mentality as you move forward.
Yeah, it changes things somehow. Like I remember, it's so trivial, but I remember like updating my Instagram bio at one point to say I was like a designer and writer. And I started getting outreach from friends or people I hadn't talked to in a while being like, hey, can you help me like with, I have a photography brand. Can you help me with my copy? It's just like,
yeah,
people notice, and it starts kind of bringing the right things into your life. So
yeah,
it does something.
Manifests.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been talking about mood boards, vision boards a lot.
Totally.
Here.
Do you?
I wouldn't say officially, but like I'm pretty religiously on Pinterest and Tumblr and kind of just like to curate things.
Yeah.
How do I want to dress? How do I want the design world to like influence my work? How do I want, what kind of tattoos do I want? Like,
really?
For sure. I would say Pinterest is probably my vision boarding.
Love Pinterest. Way too many boards from over the years spanning random topics.
It is a disaster to go back and look at some of those boards.
Oh my gosh. Like design mood boards from like 2011. I'm like, okay.
This is a lot of modern calligraphy.
Yeah.
I mean, Pinterest is like the unofficial sponsor of this podcast at this point.
Okay.
So it's fascinating how many people use it.
I will die on the hill that is Pinterest is the greatest design tool and just needs a really good rebrand.
Mm.
I think they're stuck in people's minds as the like twinkle light, mason jar, like cutesy, French braid hollow edit on photos. Like it's stuck there for people, but it's like I use it more than Dribbble. I use it more than like other sort of design forward platforms because it's the algorithm's amazing.
It really is. And like,
yeah,
I mean, even I guess the only concern is like sea of same. If people are looking for the same things, they get served the same type of imagery, but there's ways around
completely. Yeah, you kind of have to be like, this is, I find that like tattoos, that is so accurate where you'll see tattoos and then think that you're the only one because you've been searching for so long. And then somehow it's like that is the thing that every single person went to the tattoo shop to ask for.
Yeah. And then before you know it, everyone has the same floral tattoos.
Completely.
But I think it's like, it's such a sea of just stuff to look at. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's easier to search through than an Instagram or, I mean, I think
completely.
I used to use like Flickr as my inspiration. Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago. Aging myself. But Flickr was amazing for that stuff. But man, Pinterest is just, it's like an archive of the internet at this point. It's, you can't Google stuff. You can't Google image anything. It's the only place. I used to use Found. I don't know if I remember Found.
Design inspiration. You ever use that? It's kind of like Pinteresty. So if you type in what you're looking for, and then it spits out a whole grid of results. And then if you click into one image, it'll show you more related content.
Cool. I've never used it. That sounds awesome.
And then I know some people are super stoked by Arena, which is, I haven't tried it yet.
It's new, right? I keep hearing about it, but I haven't used it yet.
Yeah.
It's not super new. It's just, I think like UI is a little difficult because everything's called a block and it's very minimal. And for some reason it doesn't default as visual search. So you have to search for blocks. It's interesting.
There's a learning curve.
And then there's the new one is Cosmos, which is paid though.
Oh, you gotta be a member.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'll pay for something if I'm, you know, using it.
Not while Pinterest exists.
Right?
I know, right?
I mean, if they started charging, I'd probably pay. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, same.
Oh, God, don't say that out.
Don't keep that in.
We're editing that part out. We would never pay.
Well, I know we're a little bit over, and I want to be super respectful of your time. Thank you so much for coming to speak with us. It was so lovely hearing more about your journey and your story and what you're up to now. It's really inspiring. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So great to meet you both. And I'm excited about this podcast. I can't wait to listen. Thanks for connecting.
Of course.
Thank you for your beautiful product. It's of course brought a lot of joy into my life, and I have a daughter who is obsessed with it. She's 7.
Amazing.
Oh, so into it. Like, it's actually she was the one that found it on the shelf and was like,
I'm telling you, it's those animals
doing it. It helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the other ones are so stuffy. The other ones
feel
It's fun. Fresh.
Ah, that's so great. Thank you guys both so much.
Love it.